Good morning and welcome to Copper Country Today. We are heard Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock on 97.7 The Wolf, 8 o'clock on AM 1400 WCCY, and 9 o'clock on KBAR 102.3. Our program is brought to you in part by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic, providing the highest quality in medical care to help their patients live longer and healthier lives. Several weeks ago, a group of educators from the Copper Country traveled to Finland to learn about the school system there. The Finnish educational system is noted as one of the most successful in the world, and so they went to see what they could learn, and maybe there are some things that they could apply to our school systems here, and I was kind of curious what they learned and what they thought they might apply. So Jennifer Lynn joins me on the program today. Jennifer is the superintendent and also the early education principal in the Berriga School District. And since you were the highest ranking educator on the trip, I figured that this would be the appropriate person to talk to. So Jennifer, welcome to the program. Thank you for your time. Thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
The trip got started how? This was something that actually kind of came out of FinFest?
Yeah, that's where it started evolving from. Although, honestly, in my district, we had kind of jokingly had a pipe dream on my school improvement team because we have been working diligently towards developing early intervention systems for reading for our youngest students, where we identify problems early and we find interventions so that we solve the problem before it gets bigger. And while we were developing that, we knew that Finland, or we thought Finland was doing a lot of this. So we kind of sent a dream out and said, well, maybe someday we could all go to Finland together for a professional development.
Oh, yeah, like that'll ever really happen.
It would, of course, absolutely. So, you know, we knew we were just, you know, kind of playing with words there. But then President Philip Johnson shared with the superintendents that as FinFest was coming up to the Houghton-Hancock area, that Finlandia University was going to host the Finnish Education Forum. And he provided all of the superintendents with a book by Pasi Sahlberg, who is a notable educator and researcher from Finland, and encouraged us to get our teachers involved, come and hear what Pasi Sahlberg was going to share with us. So Pasi came to the FinFest and brought a delegation from Finland and CIMO, which is the Center for International Mobility. I turned back to my school improvement people and I said, and all of our teachers, and I said, well, we can't go to Finland, but it looks like Finland's coming to us. So let's all, as many of us can manage that in June, let's go. And Berriga did have quite a substantial representation of our teachers there.
Yeah, you had more turnout than anybody else, as I understand.
Yes. So, you know, it was a great, great event. Really enjoyed it. Enjoyed reading Pasi's work. And I thought that was the end of it. But lo and behold, Finlandia felt that it would be very valuable for our region, especially because of our Finnish heritage up here and our ties still to Finland, to continue a dialogue and to build relationships with our colleagues in Finland. So from there, Dr. Johnson pulled a steering committee together and found resources to send a group of us over to Finland to continue the bridge building and to start building relationships between here and Finland.
What is it about the Finnish school district that has so impressed the world?
I think the world is impressed because they make the headlines when the PISA scores come out.
What is a PISA score?
What is a PISA score? PISA is...
I've had a PISA pie.
Have you?
Does that count?
And it's not a Leaning Tower of PISA.
Okay.
So the PISA scores, it's an international assessment that developed countries participate in to kind of check the temperature of their education system. And they are compared to each other's. Finland has ranked in, you know, has held high rankings since, I'd have to look back at the dates, but for a couple of decades, and they moved up. They weren't always that highly ranked. they've always been highly ranked for literacy. So historically, Finland has been a highly literate country, but they also, their math scores went up, their science scores went up. So the world started paying a lot of attention to the Finnish education system because those results were coming in highly ranked, but their system does look quite a bit different than the other highly ranked countries, such as Korea or Singapore. What is the difference between the Asian highly ranked countries and the Finnish? And I think with the Upper Peninsula having such strong Finnish roots, when we talk about something that's going to be relevant for our families, that was our school improvement conversation, was cultural relevance. Is, if we have such strong Finnish roots and the Finnish system is doing so well, let's find out what our families are doing on the other side.
Yeah. What is the difference between the Finnish system and those Asian systems that are so successful? I know some of the Asian systems, they do year-round school. The mm-hmm. kids are in school a lot more days. They start very early in their educational system. How does that differ from what they're doing in Finland?
We could pretty much take every statement you made and turn it around to the opposite.
Okay.
In the Finnish system, they actually provide less instructional hours than most other developed countries. They do go an average of 190 days per year, which is very fairly close to us. It's a little bit longer.
Nominally 10 more days or so than we try to if we don't have this much snow.
Yes, but their days are also shorter than our average day. So they have shorter days, maybe a little bit longer, but the students are actually in school some of the least amount of time compared to other countries.
That would seem to be counterindicative.
Yeah, very counterintuitive. And again, we've been exploring. I've been doing a lot of reading, so it still feels counterintuitive to me.
Yeah, you haven't found a logic to it yet in terms of maybe they're there less, that they're more focused or something like that, to overwhelm if you're there too long? I don't know.
Yeah, and I can't, that question has been answered for me at this point, but they are in school less as far as time goes, the students are. It's not a year-round system, and they also don't start their compulsory education until the age of 7. So they don't, and they only have 9 years of compulsory education up to the age of 16.
As opposed to our system, which has 13 years.
Right.
Including kindergarten.
Yeah, they have 9, we have 13. They do have a very high rate of participation in their state-provided or state-subsidized early education programs, their daycare, preschool, kindergarten, that's all together. And we did get to go to one of those centers and observe there directly.
Yeah, that's been one of my questions, because I had heard that the formal education didn't start until a couple of years after ours did. And I wondered what they did with those kids before that. Did they just let them play? Did they just let them relax? Or was there a formalized type of preschool program for those kids?
I think when going there, I thought I would see I think I saw a little bit more formal than I had expected, but a lot less formal than what we do in the United States or in Michigan. And I think it's a better discussion to talk about Michigan compared to Finland because of the size and the population. Finland equates size and population-wise more to Minnesota. And because in the United States, our education is driven, policies are driven primarily by our state, not our federal government. So I think that state-to-nation comparison is maybe a little bit more accurate. But the students come in. The center we went to was in Porvoo, which is Hancock's sister city, and they had children starting at the age of 1.5 all the way up through their kindergarten. Now, their kindergarten does have a curriculum and it does have materials, but it is, how do I put this? It's very individual, child-centered, and so the teachers are getting a sense of where the students are with their literacy, and they may add some support. But one thing that is notably missing from the, you know, youngest to the oldest is the standardized testing. They don't use standardized testing. The PISA piece is a standardized international test that it's a sampling of the population. Not everybody takes it.
Okay.
So that phenomenon of testing and publishing and ranking, that is extremely foreign to them. So when we tried explaining that, we kind of got some strange looks, like, like, no, we don't do that.
This very individualized approach with the very young kids, does that take more staff than we provide in our system here? Because obviously, if you're going to pay more attention to each child, it takes more time.
I'm not sure what the staff ratios do change. I don't know that I would have the exact comparison there.
Okay.
So that one would be a hard call.
If not every child goes through that pre-kindergarten and kindergarten and preschool program, are there, or have you heard that there are some kids who come into this formalized education when they start at age 7 with a real disadvantage?
They didn't speak to that. They did. The percentage is 90% go through that preschool and
kindergarten
program. So they have very high. It isn't entirely, the state also supports quite a bit. There's a high investment in the state for providing free public education. But the preschool part is on a sliding scale, so that families may be contributing and some may have it for free. But compulsory ed is entirely provided free, and so is through university. That is also provided free by the state.
Well, that's a heck of an investment by the state.
It is. And that, when we did visit the Ministry of Education and Culture, that was one of the points that they emphasized, was there's, you know, in their reflection on why they do well, it was the one of the things that they believe is that their high level of investment in providing equitable education opportunities to everybody, regardless of their background, is one of the mainstays of their system. And they did go through a massive reform starting in the 1970s. So this has been, it wasn't a happenstance. It was mindfully developed.
By design.
This is by design. And it's also a no dead ends system. So
what is a no dead ends system?
Yeah, I didn't know until I went. So when education talks about tracking students into, well, you're going to go down the vocational track, or you're going to go to the university track. And like, a student may take a test to go there. When I student taught in England many years ago, they took a very serious test before they went into their upper secondary.
Yeah, that was the first thing that crossed my mind, is that there comes a point, if you have one of these systems that split at the high school level into Voc Ed and college preparatory, I know the British system, there's a point where you make a decision and that's it.
Your A levels and your O levels. So and it was 20 years ago I was there, so also comparing to what I experienced in the British system was the is that if you tested into one, if you test into your ordinary levels, you would go down the vocational track. If you wanted to go academic, you could, but nobody was going to hold your hand either. So there was a lot of engineering going on there. In the Finnish system, you went, you know, if you chose to go vocational and then decided to switch over to academic, to the university, that is easy to do. If you finished your vocational training and you decided that career, went into that career for a period of time and needed to retool and wanted to go academic, you could go shift to academic and vice versa. And over time, they showed us how that had changed over time, that there was a time when fewer students went into vocational training. And vocational being, you know, not just like skilled trades, but also any of the professions. Marketing would be considered vocational.
Nursing, things
nursing
like that?
Nursing would be vocational. So what academic would be learning how to research also. So a university academic would be a researcher as well. So there's applied sciences where you're taking the theory and you're applying it. That would be more of the vocational track.
All right. My guest is Jennifer Lynn. She is the superintendent of the Baraga School District, was one of a fairly large group of educators who recently traveled from here to Finland to take a look at their educational system. You've mentioned a little bit about this, but what kind of schools did you visit in Finland?
We had a wonderful program designed for us by the Center for International Mobility. And they asked us ahead of time, what did we want to see? And of course, we said everything. So they actually gave us a very good overview. We started with the Church of Finland, actually. They gave us an orientation to their role in society and their connection to Finlandia. And then we spent a Monday visiting the Center for International Mobility and the Ministry of Education and the U.S. Embassy meeting with Fulbright scholars. So that gave us a system overview and getting to meet people. Then we jumped into the schools. And each day that we had school visits, there were the group broke up into two groups so we could see more. We went to comprehensive schools, which would be the compulsory school starting from age 7 to 16. And
so that would be roughly the equivalent of our elementary through middle school and early high school?
Yeah, about second grade would be when you're, a 7-year-old would be about second grade here. Yep. So we went into those. The one that I was able to go to for the comprehensive school the first day had a focus on the visual arts. And they were working on thematic instruction at school-wide. So they called it their Phenomenon Week. And so the teachers all collaborated in developing a week of integrated, hands-on, get out into the community and learn about these phenomenon. So each grade level had a different phenomenon they were studying. It was all designed by the teachers.
Phenomenon Week?
Yes. They did kind of warn us, well, you are coming while we're doing phenomenon. And I thought that sounds phenomenal.
Okay.
The youngest students that we saw, which would be equivalent to our second graders, their phenomenon was playgrounds. And they were designing their own playgrounds and they were writing about their playgrounds, and they were going out into Helsinki and exploring the playgrounds in Helsinki. So, I got to see the students do their playground designs, and then the second year class, which would be like our third grade, they were exploring the phenomenon of the transportation system, the public transportation in Helsinki. So they were drawing maps and learning to read, drawing their own maps and learning to read the maps. And then their big field experience was going to be going out and navigating Helsinki.
And some would come back and they're the ones that get to go into college. See?
Right.
The ones that don't ones you have to go out and find. They're,
well, Todd, what was very interesting, it's the things you don't expect to see was the students, even as young as 7 years old, already navigate the public transportation system to get to school. The schools don't provide the transportation system. Families and public transit is how students independently get to school.
And can you imagine sending kids out, at 7-year-old kids out on the bus in Chicago or Detroit? My word. Is there a real sense of independence among these little kids?
Yes, and that was one of the things that really stood out to us, was the level of independence at such a young age, and the level of trust in the community at so many levels. After school, the students can go to the public parks for some after-school programming, but they're not registered and signed in. They just go to the park, and there's programs there, and then they get themselves home. So the school day ends fairly early, like around 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and the parents are still at work, and these children...
They're roaming around one of the world's major cities on their own.
Yes.
I cannot see this happening in Chicago or Detroit.
Furthermore, we went to a upper secondary school that was also a visual arts school. I did choose to go to the visual arts school because I really enjoy that, that end of life. And I also noted that Finland doesn't consider art. The arts are not supplemental courses. They are core, which is I personally appreciate.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that because you know I have an appreciation of that as well.
Yes, that it's the in fact the Ministry of Education. It's the Ministry of Education and Culture, and so you know those the culture is also highly promoted. But at that school, we were talking to some. Young women, 16 years old, in their upper secondary education, that chose to go to this school of the visual arts. And their families weren't from Helsinki. The one girl, her family was from probably about 2 hours away, and she came to town. She had her own flat at 16. She lived in her own apartment and got herself back and forth from high school.
Wow. That's something that we would almost consider child abuse. In our country.
Well, it might fall under homeless or a displaced youth.
Mom and dad say, okay, kid, you can drive. You're out and go move to Marquette and find a school.
Well, but the parents do support. So it was definitely one of those culture pieces that you didn't expect. And you just went, wow. And I have daughters who are 18 years old. Yep. And I'm trying to wrap my head around them going off to college next year and being independent. And I meet this young woman who is very confident and poised. And she admitted that doing her own laundry wasn't exactly, you know. It was very impressive how much independence was, you know, that the students exhibited.
Yeah, let's expound a little bit on this arts thing, because in the United States, arts have really fallen on hard times in our school district. And I know that it's not the choice of school administrators this has happened. This is something that's been brought about by budget constraints and budget cuts and things of that nature. They integrate this fully.
Yes, very much so. Handicrafts are in all the curriculum. Woodworking is very valued. And of course, I know your appreciation for music. So these are all parts of the national curriculum. They do the country has a set of standards. However, how those standards are taught is is up to the teachers and their principal, and there's not so there's an incredible amount of autonomy in how they're taught, but there is a high standard for arts and culture within the school.
So we have much more to talk about, and we will do that in a few minutes when we come back on Copper Country Today. I'm talking with Jennifer Lynn. She is the young elementary or K through 2 principal and superintendent.
Yes.
At the Baraga School District. She and a number of other teachers recently made a trip over to Finland and looked at the educational system there. I'd like to find out a couple of things. I'd like to talk a little bit more about how they don't use standardized tests.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's talk about what you've learned that maybe can be applied here as we move forward with our educational system. And we'll do that when Copper Country Today continues in just a moment. Our program is brought to you by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic. And we'll be back in just a moment.